You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Allison Agston. Allison, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Allison, you're in LA right now, is that correct?
That is correct.
So let's talk about the main museum and your role there. Without me giving a lengthy introduction, can you tell us a little about the museum and what you're doing there?
Sure. It is a new institution focused on LA art and artists, and we have a residency program at the center of our organizing rather than a collection.
And is that, that's kind of an either-or proposition rather than building a collection, which is a very interesting idea, and putting money into a collection and resources into a collection. The resources that the museum has are going into the residencies only, and the museum then shows work of the residents, or how is that?
Not necessarily. The residency is really an opportunity for artists to work as much or as little as they would like. There is no expectation of output. It's really meant to be as supportive as possible in that way, though artists can suggest programs or exhibitions, and one of our artists in residence did have an exhibition with us, and another one of them did make a program at the culmination of her residency. It's actually really, really open-ended. And to speak to what you mentioned earlier about residency versus a collection, I don't think it has to be either or, but I think probably with each institution, as time passes, or maybe from the beginning, there are certain things that are in sharpest focus. And for us, one of those things is finding a way to directly serve artists. And we felt like the residency program was one of the best ways to do that. I know from my experience doing lots and lots of studio visits and meeting with artists in Los Angeles, studio space is one of the most needed resources in town. And honestly, we are a city of great museums. I didn't know that we necessarily needed to be putting resources towards buying art when we've got that covered. And frankly, I think that there is another more contemporary approach that could be more beneficial to LA right now.
Well, you know, it's very interesting that you talked about how to serve artists, because typically that's not in a museum's mission. If I'm not misunderstanding most museums' mission, it's to educate the public and show art, but not necessarily to attend to the needs of artists or support artists.
Yeah, I think many of our visitors here might actually not understand that to be a central principle in our work, the residency program, because they do see really great exhibitions that stand alone on their own without the residency program. But these exhibitions are in support of artists in their own unique ways themselves. We're showing living artists. Often we're showing artists who haven't been shown much before, either because of the media they work in, or, you know, maybe even the stage they're at in their careers. So that the idea of supporting artists is running through those exhibitions in a particular way too.
I really like that so much, that idea, and it seems that it is a progressive idea, and it makes me kind of wonder, what is the use of building these massive collections that all the wonderful museums around you have, right? These giant collections that can't even all be mounted at once. You know, I mean, I don't know what the percentage is, but I imagine it's a fraction of what most of them own that can even be shown. So I kind of wonder, what is the goal of collecting so much work? I mean, in a cynical way, I could think, well, it's to, you know, support the board members who are investing in these artists.
right.
You know, have all this stuff. But I don't know. Is do you think that is part of it? Like why build a massive collection? Obviously, the Broad has, you know, they have a collection, so they house the collection. But for new museums or recent museums that are collecting, what do you think is the rationale for collecting so much?
You know, I think it's the acquisitive capitalist nature to see things you want, buy them, and keep them. The statistic that I've heard before is that about 10% of the museum's permanent collection is typically on view at any given time. And I understand some of the principles of collecting, for example, when work is collected by a public institution, it stays in public circulation. It's not hanging in somebody's home, never to be seen again. And I believe in that, but I think that this complex for buying and largely storing art seems to me just a little off in this particular moment in time.
I think so too, and I think that makes sense what you're saying, that it is, you know, an outgrowth of just the acquisitive nature of capitalist institutions. You know, we see what we like and we buy, but it also affects how the work is shown, right? You're showing work by, as you outlined, you know, contemporary artists from a variety of backgrounds and stages mm-hmm. in their careers, and perhaps that's not something another museum could do that has a large collection, because they're in some ways married to the collection, perhaps?
Yes, and I think you just have different commitments when you're collecting than we do. If you're organizing around artists in this particular way, if you're thinking about your artists in residence as a real big focal point, then a lot of other things naturally emerge from that about how you want to operate the institution that you want to be. Many of the artists that we've shown here, they fall into actually a few kind of neat categories. There's artists whose work you should know about. They've been toiling away, but you don't. Artists that you should know about, but they're just coming up. Or practices from artists who you might know, but this isn't the work of theirs that they're going to get support for anywhere else. We really pride ourselves on that.
That is something to be proud of, I think. And I wanted to ask you about you mentioned in, I think, a recent letter that was posted on your website that as you reached out to artists for what they need, one of the things was that came up was community. A sense of
yes.
community seemed to be put forward by everyone. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm putting you on the spot, but you mentioned you had some ideas about that. But you don't have to mention those ideas, perhaps, but let's talk about that a little bit, because that's so, I mean, here's L.A., you think, wow, what an amazing community of artists there must be, yet it seems to be still at the top of artists' list to want to be in a community.
Yeah, it made me feel sad, frankly, that so many artists weren't feeling that, because we do have such an incredible artist community, but the fact of the matter is many people work day jobs and then going out at night to programs and things like that is exhausting, and driving across this town will just, you know, take it out of you sometimes. So a couple of things I've been thinking of is how we can have some semi-public events that would help connect people. Like, for example, after I finished our recent program, Office Hours, we had a great opening for that. I thought, well, you know, something that I could do next is an Office Hours reunion, where we have the first group of Office Hours artists and the second group of Office Hours artists, because those artists are looking for a certain kind of artist-to-artist connection. And then I've also been thinking about what other kinds of matchmaking that we could do, even organizationally, because we are much better acquainted in the neighborhood now than we were before. You know, who are some homeless service providers and some other folks in the arts that might need to get together? How can I help foster those kinds of connections so that people can go out and do something just much bigger than what we could actually ever do ourselves just by them connecting?
Yeah, that's so interesting. And the Office Hours, to get into that, what does that mean exactly, the Office Hours artists?
Sure. Office Hours is a program I did for the first time just after we opened in 2016, and then I did it again this past year. I do on-site studio visits, as I call them, here for the first 50 neighborhood artists who sign up. So I basically block out, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of my time, and I spend my days in these hour-long meetings getting to know who's working in our community. And at the end of each meeting, an artist can leave a work behind that we hang and put up that's in a show that's open for a couple of weeks after all of the meetings. But the point is really to create a relational museum by knowing your neighbors, by knowing the people that you intend to serve, and by really listening and being able to respond after those conversations.
I sure love that idea. That seems very forward thinking. So I have to ask, what's your background that you're so sensitive to artists' needs and are creating, I think, forums that are so needed and not what we're seeing in the art world very much?
Oh, I really appreciate that. Thank you. Well, I think that my approach comes from not having a formal art background, and so it's I'm not super good at following rules anyway, but if you don't know the rules to begin with, it's even easier to ignore them. I have a BA in English from UCLA, and when I graduated school here, I got a job from an internship I was doing at CNN. So I was a news producer for the first 5 years of my career, and then I covered the arts a great deal, and I did a story about LACMA, and they met me, and they ended up hiring me, and then I have no idea what I'm doing here, frankly. I always kind of can't believe that this is my job now, both because I love it so much, but also because it seems highly improbable.
That's so interesting. And in terms of LA and artists, since you seem to be exploring so much, you know, artists' needs in the community, how is it for as a place to survive for artists? And I think I'm kind of pointing to the larger question of also artists, you know, in urban environments where studios are very expensive, rent is expensive, and it sounds like the museum could possibly play a role in how artists survive in these scenarios. So I guess I'm asking about the future of how artists are supported in big cities, but also, isn't that part of what the museum is doing as well in supporting artists in an urban environment like that? You're counteracting forces of perhaps gentrification and the economy.
Without a doubt, you said it perfectly. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. This is an incredible time to be in Los Angeles because we have an extraordinary art community. We have great art schools here. So there's the energy of artists emerging onto the scene, and we have these some really iconic even art world figures here. But in the meantime, artists are getting priced out of their spaces left and right. I have more conversations than I care to admit with artists about how bad things have gotten for them, about the measures they've had to take to get by from, I know two artists who have given up their apartments and are sleeping in their studios, and one of those studios doesn't have a bathroom. So it's real. And anything that we do here at the Main at the end of the day will only be a drop in the bucket, but it's a move in the right direction, I think.
And if we moved further in that right direction in an ideal world, what would that mean? Would it mean something like the way the government in Holland and Amsterdam supports artists, and there's much more grants available and all that kind of thing? You think the model that would be ideal here? Because the U.S. is so different, it seems, from other countries in terms of support for the artists. I talk to people in, you know, Sweden, and, you know, they have grants that last 8 years.
Isn't it wild? The length of those terms is astounding to me.
It is. It's just extraordinary. And other artists who, you know, are living from one residency to another, traveling around, and are often supported by their country to go to that residency and have travel expenses. So is that where you think things are pointing towards, or where you'd like them to move towards? Or is that also kind of, I don't know, maybe outmoded? Or
I don't know. I think it sounds pretty incredible to me. I was in Munster this past summer for a sculpture Project Munster, and I met an artist who invited me back to his studio that was connected to a Kunsthalle, and there was probably 30 studios, and once you received your studio there, you could petition to just continue being in it, and though they weren't meant to be live-work, he was living in his, and so was a number of his friends, and including somebody who had been there for 30 years. With this free space. It just seems so far from our reality here, though. I think that the artist is often a low-income person in a community that can get priced out, just like working-class folks. And so as we think about gentrification and how far it can go, New York City, for example, San Francisco, which is, you know, now a tech monoculture and there's no artists left, how do we secure housing for artists so that artists stay in our cities? I think that's a really urgent question.
Mm, I think so, too. And let's talk a little bit about some of the exhibits that are up now and who they are.
Sure.
I know that, tell me.
We right now are, I'm speaking to you from the middle of a construction zone, from what will be in just a few weeks' time a new 2,700 square foot gallery, but right now it's where all the staff is sitting as we get ready to move into some offices right next door tomorrow. And once we finish up this space and a new setup for the artist in residence, which is five studios versus the two we had before, then we will open two shows, both on the 25th of February. One is called Dora Delarios, Other Worlds, and the other is called Rigo 23, Ripples Become Waves. And the Rigo show, as we call it internally, is centered on statue of Leonard Peltier that Rigo made and that was installed on the American University campus almost a year ago exactly. And shortly after its installation, it was suddenly removed due to protests from law enforcement supporters. Peltier, for those that don't know, was convicted in the 70s of a pair of murders on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, although that case is really so broadly contested that his release has been called for by the Archbishop Desmond Tutu, the Dalai Lama, you name it. So Rigo's work was removed from campus, removed from its site, put in storage somewhere he didn't know where, and he was really, I think, only able to get it back because of the pressure of this exhibition. So it will be shown again for the first time in February alongside some very large-scale banners he's made in support of Indigenous rights. And the whole show also is concerned with the plight of political prisoners. So that's one exhibition. And the other is of a ceramist, Dora Delarios, who is 84 and who is so underknown that it's criminal. But the fact of the matter is when she began working in the 50s, there really wasn't a lot of attention towards Mexican-American ceramists who were women. So this is her time. We're going to be sure that the world knows about her. And even though the show's not opening for more than a month, we have a big LA Times feature coming out this week. There is a feature in Los Angeles Magazine, one in La La Magazine. We had one in a Spanish language publication. So it's pretty clear to see that all that needed to happen was for her work to be brought forth. And then, of course, everybody will fall in love with it because she's a brilliant artist and an incredible woman.
That's so exciting. Both those shows sound very, very exciting. But Dora Delarios, that sounds terrific to bring someone like that who hasn't had the visibility that she should have. When it looks like you guys have resources, and you're talking about the space that you're in now and that you're moving into, it sounds fantastic. So one question I wanted to ask is, how is the museum funded and supported? It seems that you have wonderful resources.
Well, I must tell you that we do a whole lot without that much. We run our programs as lean as we can, and we have been supported by a founder up until very recently, but now we're getting ready to shift into serious fundraising mode, and we really hope that the work that we have done towards the community will help us continue to sustain the kind of programs that we've been working on.
I hope so, too. And Is there, before I ask you the last question, is there anything else that you want to say about the museum? There'll be links to the museum here so people can find out more and understand more, but is there any other plug or mention you want to say about the museum?
Just come say hi. We are one of the few, we're probably the only museum in Los Angeles that has a pedestrian-friendly storefront location. And most of our visitors are actually walk-ins as a result because we're also free. So we really lower the barrier to participation as much as possible. And I would just love to see you.
I love that. And let me ask you the last question. What are you reading at the moment? Could be anything at all if you'd like to share that.
Well, I am waiting for my Amazon delivery. I think it'll come tonight, of Asada Shakur's biography. I'm really interested in thinking about the organizing that happened in the 60s and 70s in parallel with Leonard Peltier's arrest and incarceration. And of course, I'm always really inspired by badass women too.
So Asada Shakur meets that description. She was a member of the Black Liberation Army, right?
Yep.
That's exciting. So it sounds like the future of the museum also is activists that I mean, in a political and even apolitical sense, well, maybe not apolitical, but social and political activism is part of the agenda there?
It is. Our mission is to engage with the most important ideas of our time through the art of Los Angeles. And often that means response to a political climate, to social justice concerns. And we feel really comfortable that that's our lane, for sure.
I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing. I want to thank you for that, and I want to thank you for a talk with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
You are so kind to include me. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.